Monster Man, episode 481, Elephant Bird and Jen. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the monsters of Al-Qadim, the Arabian Nights-inspired fantasy setting for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. Before we get started looking at today's monsters, though, a couple of bits of business. First, as you can maybe hear, I have lost my voice, and that is because this past weekend I was at Bring Out Your Light, the annual gathering of the Oldhammer community, and I had a great time, and I talked to a lot of my friends, and I met a lot of great people, and it was fun, but consequently, my voice has suffered. So I didn't even go to the third day, it was so bad, but not the event was bad, my voice was bad. So I apologize for that, hopefully it'll be back to normal shortly, it usually recovers in a couple of days. Second, I've got some new patrons to thank, or rather, a lot of these are returning patrons, and I think that many people may have been affected by a problem with Patreon's billing system. Hopefully that has now all been sorted out. I'm sorry to say that I don't really have much that I can do about it on my end. So I apologize for the inconvenience, but thank you anyway to new or returning patrons, Sir Trash Panda, Mike Monikowski, Beckett at Weird Realms, and Ray Otis. Your support means a lot to me, and I'm glad that, for those of you who are returning, you were willing to go to the extra trouble to sign back up, even after this little hiccup, so I appreciate that. Finally, for our top of the show business, I received an email from listener Tim, and Tim has written in with some more information about the Debbie. So you remember that I said that the name of the Debbie was so weird that it had to be authentic. It's not something you would make up, you'd make up something better. And so Tim informs me that this is a creature from Ethiopian folklore, and a version of the story about it is recorded in publications of the Princeton Expedition to Abyssinia, which came out around 1910. I think 1910 to 1915. I don't know which year this part of it is from. I think you'll find this story familiar. The so-called Debbie is a wild animal. Its height is less than that of a dog. They say that it frightens all the wild animals. Once upon a time, a man went down to a lonely river to fetch water. But at the river, he found all the eatable and uneatable animals drinking. So the man hid himself in a certain place until all the animals had drunk and gone away. But while the man was hiding thus, he observed the animals, and after all had drunk, each went to its place. And the elephants were romping together, and the lions together, and the hyenas together, and they all were scuffling, each with its kind. Now while they were in this state, the Debbie came down to the river, and when it came, all the animals became wildly excited and fled instantly, and all left the riverbed. The man was very much astonished and exclaimed, "Thy wonder, God, what is this?" Thereupon the Debbie came down to the well, and after it had drunk it went up, then it wallowed at a certain spot, and went out by the way in which it had come down. Now when all had gone away, the man rose from his hiding place, wondering that all the eatable and uneatable animals had fled from the little one. He drew water from the well and started on his way, but then he thought, "I had better try to find out exactly what sort that is, which has put them all to flight," and he came to the place where it had weltered, and there he found a hare. Then the man took the hare and tied it up with a knot in the corner of his cloak. Afterwards, when he entered a village, all the people of the village fled from him. But the man did not know for what reason, and he went to another village, but that village also fled from him. And the man was frightened and said, "What have I become that all flee from me as from a madman?" But of the people of the village, a brave and courageous man stood before him and shouted at him, saying, "Thou man, what hast thou with thee by which thou puttest us to flight?" The other replied, "I have no weapons. On the contrary, ye flee from me by yourselves." Again the man said to him, "No. Hast thou perhaps some root with thee?" Then he thought of the hare, and answered him, "I have no root, but I went down to a riverbed," and then he summarizes the story again. And the other man bought the hare from him with money. Then he sewed it up in a leather case, and it became a talisman unto him, and he hung it around his neck. And the people of every village and tribe were afraid of him. Whatever he took raiding, he brought in, and when his village was raided, he made the raiders give up. And there was nobody who could stand before him in a fight. But afterwards, when he lost the talisman with the hare, warriors killed him, they say. And now, men say of a man who has something frightful about him, he has probably a hare of the Debbie with him. This Debbie is only seen at times, and then everybody, be it man or animal, flees from it. But he who finds some of its hair fallen on the ground and carries it on his body is feared by all men. And the abiding place of the Debbie is generally the region of the Barka, but it is not often seen. So, there's actually a footnote in which he says, "Oh, it might be some kind of bear. Like, it's not real, fella." Anyway, this detail of the hare is in the book, although I don't think I mentioned it. So I would assume, just based on how close this is, that this version of the story is what inspired the one in Monsters Compendium Appendix. Now, what is interesting is that the Debbie in the book causes fear by stamping and screaming, whereas in the original story, it's a magical property of the hair. And I wonder if that's just, again, yet more of the making things naturalistic that we've seen so much of in AD&D's second edition. All right. Tim, thank you so much for sending that in. You really satisfied my curiosity. And, you know, I don't know very much about Ethiopian folklore, and now I've got a great book to read. I can see that I'm going to have to broaden my horizons a little bit. All right, next up. This creature is called an elephant bird, but it is not to be confused with the actual species, well, multiple species, all extinct, of the same name. The actual elephant bird was a large flightless bird, and the biggest one, I think, is the biggest species of flightless bird that's known to have existed. It's sort of like an ostrich or an emu, although in fact, genetic studies have indicated that its closest relative is actually the kiwi, which is not very big. So that is the elephant bird of actual biology. But it takes its name from the elephant bird of literature, which seems to me to be what you or I might call a roc or a rook, so large that it can lift an elephant. So the thing about the roc, of course, that exists in the Monster Manual already. So this is a little bit of a different version. It is medium-sized, so very big by bird standards, about the size of a person, but not like colossal, and it attacks in large groups. It has the ability to heat rocks by sort of holding them in its crop and can drop them on its targets. It's nothing super out of the ordinary. It's a random encounter monster for Al-Qadim's jungly regions, and it's fine. You know, it's another dangerous animal that might make travel a hazard. We got a lot of those in Monster Manuals 1 and 2, and here we're getting some that are themed for this particular landscape, which helps reinforce the sense that it's different from quote-unquote classic D&D, even though presumably quite a lot of the monsters you might encounter in an Al-Qadim game are just, you know, lions and things. Next up, we have the Djinn. And Djinn, or Gen, but I think they're Djinn, are basically tiny little genies. They're just 8 inches to a foot tall. For my metric listeners, that is 20 to 30 centimeters. The Djinn are the familiars of one of the specific types of magic user in the Al-Qadim setting, and that is the Shayir. Shayir can only do magic through the mediation of Djinn. So Djinn can like pop into other planes to find little pockets of magical energy that they can sort of power the Shayir's magic with. This is a pretty common trope, right? Not just in sort of Arabian Nights stories, this idea of someone whose magical power comes from a bargain with a sort of magical helper, you know, whether that's a you know, like a spirit, like a fetch, or a devil of some kind. And this is an idea that will ultimately lead us to something like the later edition of Warlock. I like that quite a lot of the Djinn entry is a series of role-playing notes about the personality and behavior of these little genies. I mean, it's nothing too wild. Fire Djinn are mean, Air Djinn are snobby, Water Djinn are graceful, and Earth or Sand, as they're called, Djinn are blunt and honest. But they have enough of a little twist that it works. So, like, it mentions, for instance, that Fire Djinn are judgmental, Air Djinn are moralistic. Air Djinn are always giving you unsolicited advice. And I like these little characterizations of creatures that are helpful, but sort of annoying. And I like the idea of the familiar acting as a sort of chorus, commenting on the actions of their masters, but in ways that reflect their own personalities, rather than, as is often the case, I imagine, ways that reflect the GM scolding the players. The Djinn also go some way toward fulfilling a need that you get in some categories of monsters. So D&D has a lot of big monster categories. So for instance, we can see that goblins and orcs and bugbears and hobgoblins and, you know, all the way up to giants really fit in the same kind of category. They're kind of tribal humanoids, warlike. They're not really very magical. They do most of their fighting with military tactics and brute strength. And they go from low-level ones who aren't very dangerous, like goblins and kobolds, to much larger and more dangerous ones, ranging from like ogres to giants. Same thing for undead, where down at the bottom you got the humble zombie and skeleton, and then up at the top you got your death knights and your liches. And those categories of monster that have such a lot of variety are the ones that I think in any given D&D campaign you might expect to see thematically reoccur. So you might have a whole dungeon themed around the undead. You know, you might be in some necropolis. Or it wouldn't be too weird to run into undead more than once. But that's generally not true of Djinn. Genii are very important to the Al-Qadim setting, but there actually aren't a lot of genii monsters in AD&D. They're meaningfully interactable at low levels. They start out pretty tough, and I don't mean just in terms of fighting them, but genies are so powerful that the reasons that they might need you or concern themselves with you would have to be pretty contrived. Most of the time, there would not really be a fruitful form of interaction between them and low-level player characters. But if you're going to do an Arabian Nights game, you want lots of genies, so you're going to want genies that can engage with lower-level characters, and the gen can also serve that purpose. They're just like fun little magical helpers. In fact, we're going to see this recognition of a shortage of available genie types crop up again in our next episode, just in another direction. I should say, by the way, that the recording schedule and the production schedule for the next, really throughout most of August, are going to be a little different than you're used to. You know, most of the time, I do a normal episode, then a special episode, then a normal episode, then a special episode, and so on and so forth. But I am going to be on holiday for really the whole second half of August. And that means that a lot of my normal production routines are going to be disrupted. So we're going to be looking at mainly normal episodes, and they might come out at times that are a little bit different from their usual ones, just because of how my travel schedule impacts the way that I can record. I hope that you will bear with me as we go through this period. It's not going to last more than a couple of weeks, and you'll get the same number of episodes. They may just not be at the regular times. Also, audio quality might not be quite as good because I'll have my traveling microphone with me, but I hope that I'll be able to find some fun things to talk about on my trip. And I hope that no matter what I wind up talking about in these episodes, that you will join me for them right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.